Hello, Dojo Disciples. Sean Orange here with an apology. When we were recording this episode, we didn't do a whole lot of research ahead of time and just wrote down some innovations we thought of just a few minutes before the show, missing really one of the biggest innovations of all that made consoles possible. And since it's Black History Month, seems like a really, really big thing to miss. Jerry Lawson, the inventor of the cartridge. This was first used in the Channel F home video game system, so years before the NES. I know on this show we tend to think that video games began in 1985 and just sort of took this marvelous innovation for granted. But, you know, without that, we wouldn't have had the video game revolution that later came. So here's a Jerry Lawson special note at the top of the show. Look him up if you're not familiar with him. Well, I'll link to the show notes. And now for a podcast with much less interesting references and almost no research done into the names of the people who actually created these innovations.
You're listening to LittlePodcast.com.
I'm Sean the Orange Course, a retro game fan from the U.S.
And I'm Kevin Vink Tambernino, an import gaming fan who took things one step further and moved to Japan.
Together, we make Famicom Dojo, a podcast that explores the Japanese origins of today's video games and consoles,
and speculates about their future, assuming they have one.
It's modern games with a retro twist.
This is the Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast.
This week, we talk about innovations in video game consoles. Things that truly drove the industry forward, things that were a little more than cheap gimmicks, and things that just seemed like a good idea at the time. I'll talk about a game that could possibly be said to be based around a gameplay gimmick mechanic, and Vink takes the game off the pile of shame. No, it's not Mass Effect. Darn it. Yes, we were born to play all this in your games. What's that? We are, you know, for me,
listeners at home, please grab the device that you are listening to this podcast from. Bring it up to your ear, and shake it. assuming you're not on a laptop or desktop computer, but if you're on an iPhone or an iPod or your Zune, give it a shake. All right. How many ice cubes are in this podcast?
Oh, jeez.
You were wondering where I was going with that.
When?
All right. So you saw that part. You saw that part of the presentation, right? The whole thing with the introducing the HD rumble.
Right.
They were saying you can feel the difference between whether there's if you imagine you're holding a glass and you can feel the difference between one ice cube, two ice cubes, and three ice cubes. And then, of course, there's also that game in 1-2 Switch, which is to detect how many marbles are in the controller just by feel. And what do you think, this is hyperbole, or is this like a revolution? I mean, what is this to you?
I mean, I've been waiting for some kind of more sensitive haptic feedback for a while, because we've been seeing lots of technology articles in the last several years about how they're really trying to work on it. And, you know, if they've figured out a way to do that and they can make that interesting in the game, then just, you know, like varying degrees of essentially a cheap vibrator.
I'm all
for it.
Well, I mean, we talked about this a few weeks ago, but like the haptic feedback that's in like an iPhone 7 is pretty amazing as it is. Like, I really do feel like...
Is it?
You don't have an iPhone 7, do you?
No.
They've got buttons on that are not actual buttons. There's no actual give, but it feels like you're pressing it.
Oh, interesting.
It's
okay.
If you could go to an Apple store, just hit the home button on one of those, and if you weren't told ahead of time, you might think that you're actually pressing a button, but really it's just the haptics is making it feel like the button has give. It's very, very interesting. And when I heard that they were actually getting rid of the actual button and replacing it with this haptic thing, I'm like, that's not going to work. But now I'm a believer. But anyway,
So wait, the iPhone 7 home button isn't a button anymore?
It's not a button. No. It's solid, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And also they have got something called 3D touch, like if you press harder, I'm guessing. I mean, it doesn't actually feel, but like it must sense that like there's more of your thumb meat, you know, hitting or whatever. Right. But it feels like you're actually pressing almost into the screen. It's very, very interesting.
They have something, at least the 3D touch or something like that on the MacBook Pro that we just picked up for my wife. So
okay. But anyway, yeah, it's actually very interesting. And so I was reading an article on it might have been Nintendo Life or one of those sites with Nintendo in the title. I'll try to find it. But basically what they were doing is they were translating a Japanese article, which was, I think, from Famitsu, where they were interviewing all kinds of Japanese developers about their thoughts on the Switch. And almost all of them were mentioning that one of the most exciting things about it was this whole haptic system called HD Rumble. And they were all talking about the things they want to do with it. They had Senran Kagura creator who might do something lewd with it. But anyway, but everyone was talking about how they were excited about using this. Like, Grasshopper Manufacturers, Suda Goichi was talking about how he wanted to, like, feel the pro wrestling moves or whatever, you know. And he already did some amazing things with haptics with No More Heroes, so... but anyway, it was an article that was almost entirely positive. Like, everyone was talking about how excited they were about this whole thing. And then, of course, I went to that den of scum and villainy, NeoGAF, which I love. Don't get me wrong. I love them. But like, so many people were just like, no, gimmick. That's not – they shouldn't have wasted the money – just going to turn it off anyway. Like, there's already been a huge backlash on how much these Joy-Con controllers are going to cost. Right. $80 for a set. And a lot of it is probably
because... $50 individually.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of it is because of these things that are being termed gimmicks. The IR sensor that can detect your, you know, hand gestures and things like that. The HD Rumble... The fact that they are, you know, separating from the system at all of these have been called by various people different gimmicks. And they're using this in the pejorative, definitely, right here. But, like, what exactly is a gimmick, and when does a gimmick stop being a gimmick and starts being an innovation, starts being a standard, starts being, well, is it a gimmick or greatness?
Ah, okay. I like where this is going.
Okay, yeah.
I can think of a few examples.
Okay, give me one off the top of your head.
You, yes, you can sponsor an episode of the Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast. Just go to littlepodcast.com, find Famicom Dojo, and click the sponsor button. Check out with PayPal or a credit card, and let us know what wonderful thing we should say about you, our lovely sponsor, in this space. Well... totally arbitrarily, I just happened to mention the first thing that comes to mind, of course, and not off of a list that we have prepared prior to the podcast.
Okay.
But
Don't tell them how the sausage is made. Okay.
I've been playing a lot of Atari lately.
Okay.
And, you know, despite that their joystick controller is very iconic, you know, I did start my gaming life with one for my Apple II.
Yeah.
It was a little bit different, though. But
That one had a lot more give. I had the indeed. Same controller.
I really think that the D-pad's a big deal, but I mean, I don't think there's any backlash against it, was there?
Funny you should mention that. But I've been talking to people who, you know, were gaming a lot longer than I have, because the Nintendo's really the first system I played in depth. But like, when the D-pad first came out, a lot of the commentary on it was that it would look good in pictures, you know, that it was supposed to look all futuristically, but that it wasn't a quality input device. there were people who thought that it would do fine for, like, you know, simple games, you know, if you're playing like a board game or something like that. But a game that has like intense action or, you know, something like that, playing like Tempest or playing, you know, a space shooter or something, that it won't have the kind of feel or precision of a joystick. And a lot of people dismissed it. And a lot of the early third party controllers for the Nintendo, the NES system, were joysticks, because a lot of people felt that, like, oh man, I'm not gonna like this new control scheme, so I need something to go back to. And in fact, I bought into that when I got the first Famicom. One of the games with it was Pac-Man. And I had believed to myself that there was no way I'd be able to play Pac-Man if I didn't have a joystick. So I went to KB Toys and I bought the cheapest possible joystick. It was really, it was like gray and orange. It was really terrible. But I would switch out my controller whenever I was playing Pac-Man. I would put that controller in to play Pac-Man, and I found I couldn't play Mario with it at all. It was just terrible for playing Mario, and it played pretty good on Pac-Man, but then as time went on, I got lazier, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to play Pac-Man, and I didn't switch the controller, and I'm like, oh, wait, this is okay. This is not so bad. But, yeah, now we're like, of course, gamers right now are looking at the Switch and going, there's no actual D-pad.
Right. I was just thinking that. It's like that's crazy talk. I mean, the Pro Controller has one, but you know, and the buttons on the left controller act like a D-pad, more or less. But yeah, that's, you know, I
feel the same way though. Like, that's one of the things that never really appealed to me about the whole PlayStation thing was the disconnected D-pad. But you know, it works on my Vita pretty well. I don't know.
Well, you know, Nintendo toy with taking the D-pad away for the GameCube designs that,
some of the
older ones that we saw, like the start button was where the D-pad is now.
Yeah.
So this isn't hardly the first time. But, I mean, you know, just looking back at the criticism, I guess it wasn't entirely unwarranted. It might seem horrifying and laughable now. But, you know, when the D-pad was introduced, it wasn't for the NES. It was for the Game & Watch games that needed that space savings.
Yeah.
So when they talk about the games being simplistic, they're talking about Game & Watch games probably very specifically.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know how they couldn't see past that and be like, well, it's just a different input for the exact same 8-way run thing.
I guess it's because as much as like we in people who are gamers are always clamoring for the newest in graphics, the newest in sound, the technology, but when it comes to gameplay experiences, I'd say we're pretty conservative. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like when Splatoon was announced, there was a lot of backlash against it because it didn't check all the boxes for what an arena shooter should look like, you know?
Right.
And I think that's why it did well in Japan, who traditionally don't like shooters, because it wasn't that thing that they'd already decided earlier that they didn't like, you know?
Right.
So I think we're very hesitant to change, you know what I mean? Do you remember PlayStation 3, when it was first announced, had the boomerang controller? We should look up a picture of this.
Right, yeah, I remember that picture for sure.
And like people were flipping tables, and you know, this was, and Sony heard the and went back to a design that looks almost exactly like a PlayStation 2 controller. You know,
right, exactly.
And still, even like the PlayStation 4 controller, you know, is different, but it's still very much rooted in what was traditionally there. And Nintendo with the Wii U was like, the gamepad. You're going to play with the gamepad. But here's a controller that looks like the Xbox 360 controller. You know?
I got to get that video out, don't I? Man, before the... I don't have a lot of time.
Hey,
3 weeks?
But hey, look at it this way, Sean.
Yeah.
The longer you wait to finish that video, which was supposed to be about new tech, the more that it actually becomes part of our whole retro ambiance.
Oh, good Lord. Well, I'm... the D-pad and joystick debate isn't settled, of course. Like, the D-pad's a perfectly fine input device.
Yeah.
But you ask at least the fighting fans that I would play with, like, they would hate using a D-pad, and I would end up doing it, but I agree, at least for fighting games, the joystick is a better approach because you can get pretty precise, especially because a lot of moves require you to be in certain positions and the eight-way switch.
Definitely. And on that same note, you know, if you talk to someone who plays Smash Brothers, you know, people who are like pro gamers with Smash Brothers, there is no choice other than a GameCube controller, you know.
Right.
Nintendo has released all kinds of different input methods for both the Wii and the Wii U, but the one people keep going back to is that standard GameCube, partially because it's wired. That's important for, you know, making sure it doesn't conflict, you know,
quite
signals.
A bit because it's wired, yeah.
Obviously. But at the same time, like, even if it wasn't wired, like, the GameCube controller is still, like, the preferred input method for that game, you know. So that's interesting as well. You know, we are reluctant to change. Look at me. You're going to have to take my cartridges out of my cold dead hands.
Oh, God.
What is, you know, what things are gimmicks and what things are not is really, it's something that kind of history has to decide.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to dive into it? Yes. We did prepare a little bit of a list, but before we started. But let's see where that goes.
Sure. This is actually one you thought up,
okay.
Full motion video. I think this is a great example because, I mean, you know, aside from shoulder buttons, I can't think of what happened.
Yeah.
What else happened in the 16-bit era that was a big deal for consoles?
Okay. Well, I guess you also have like CD quality sound or just CDs,
right.
but full motion video. So what are you going to go with here? A gimmick or greatness?
It was an important stopgap.
Okay.
And in some ways is still used or can be used because even if now, these things are rendered in real time on a lot of games. The idea of a cinematic is still very much a part of the gaming experience, which is kind of a jarring thing, actually, because typically, you know, you have a game and you have control 100% of the time. And like with this era of gaming, like, gamers had to learn that there are just times where you just watch and you can't do anything.
Yeah, that's very so interesting because, an arcade game, you can't even imagine, like, the arcade's like, okay, guys, for the next 5 minutes, just watch, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because any story that a game had was, like, written on the side of the cabinet, you know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
And you know, so even like when you had an early game like Ninja Gaiden. sorry, had
Gaiden.
To get that. Had to get that in there. But I'm sorry, I couldn't help it. But no, it is an early example of a game with cutscenes. And at the time, people were a little divided about that too because it seemed kind of silly. To some, like, I think overall people regarded it as a good addition to the game, but at that time most games didn't have any parts where you were reading or, you know, you just went from action to action to action, and this was actually building into the game a story. Like, even a game like Zelda, the first Zelda, had almost no text. I mean, you felt you were on an adventure just because of the varied terrain, the differences in dungeons and things like that. But, like, you know, there was no real character development or anything. You know, you put into it what you felt, you know, the how the character was, you know, what they, you know, you filled in the gaps, basically.
Mm-hmm. And now the gaps are filled in for you, and there are a lot of people paid not enough money to spend many, many hours, years of their lives to get this stuff pumped out.
Go ahead.
The there's another extreme this goes to where the entire game is basically a full motion video.
Yeah.
And your controlling it is incidental. So
yeah.
there are games where they built this as like a QuickTime system,
yeah,
which is either a part of the game, so you're not entirely just watching a video and not interacting at all, but
yeah.
You know that interaction is minimal. Or you have games like Indigo Prophecy, aka
yeah.
Fahrenheit for our foreign listeners,
yes.
Which starts out like a traditional game, but then like slowly devolves into just watching a movie happen, and you're playing Simon while the movie is happening to
yep.
unlock the next scene in the movie.
Heavy Rain was a little like that, too. Same developer, I think. No?
Yeah.
Wait, is
yeah,
that Quantic
Dream?
That's Quantic
yep.
Dream. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. But, yeah, it definitely happens. I have a game that I need to do an unboxing of, actually, that is... I bought the Super Amazing Special Edition, which is taking up a huge amount of my room right now. Like, it's as big as a Wii U box. And
okay.
this is a full motion video game that started in the late 90s, but never finished up until about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it features video. It features a lot of MST3K alumni. You know, people mm-hmm. from that show, Joel Hodgson's in it, and so I got this amazing super special edition that yeah, it weighs a ton. The shipping cost me more than the game. And I've been meaning to do an unboxing video. And then from that, I'd love to do something more. But like full motion video game has a bit of like a nostalgic quality to it as well. And people are still making them. There's a lot of games on iOS that are still like full motion video games. Someone was trying to get Night Trap rebooted recently.
Oh, God.
I don't know if that's a wise move, but, you know. Go ahead.
Here are places where it's not quite so gimmicky.
Yeah.
One of my favorite video games of all time is the Journeyman yeah. Project series, and
or at least
the first one or two.
Yeah.
And the first one, had you know it was kind of like the Mortal Kombat thing where it's like
yeah.
they had some like low frame but like you know shot video.
Yeah,
they interlay with like the 3D rendered world, and so there were like a lot of scenes where you'd like see something. Like in the second game, they really upped that a bit, and there were lots of like video clips you could watch, but you know in this like gamified world, right? So if I want to take that to like a bigger extreme, where you know probably something more like Night Trap, where most of the game is just watching stuff, but there's stuff to do in the middle, that is, I guess, the negative, possibly gimmicky part of it. It's like you can only do so much with these 16-bit systems or even PC hardware back in the day. So you needed to fill the gap with pre-rendered or filmed or whatever stuff. But like the funniest thing to me still is the Sega CD version of Mortal Kombat, which has an ad. You know, like a long
yeah.
version of the TV ad that came out at the time, like horribly pixelated.
Yep.
Definitely not good enough. But my most favorite example of this is always and will forever be Scottie Pippen Slam City.
you bring that up so many times. Okay.
It's so good because it's so bad. Like there's a game in there, but it's not the point.
They should put that on the box. There's a like game in there, but it's not the point.
My favorite parts are like when you just fail and fail and fail, and like you know, it's for a specific player you're playing against. But the worse you do, the more this guy makes a move on your girlfriend watching from the sidelines. This is all like you know, very like early 90s terrible video, and if you just totally you know burn up and don't do well, she leaves with him. It's like
you really need to do a let's play of this one.
I should.
You
it's
really,
so
really
wonderful.
Okay.
And I'm so bad at it too. So
okay, in August, let's do that.
Oh God. Okay. Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh,
because
it's coming back to America.
Guess who's back again? Okay. Anyway, me.
Yeah.
I'll be in the United States in August, and we'll think of a bunch of stuff to film then. Yeah.
You still haven't seen the stuff that we did the last time he was here, but you know, nope. Maybe by then you will.
I haven't seen the footage either. I would love to see it. Yeah.
It's off the camera now, so that's good.
Well, that's nice. That's nice. But like there are at least 6 videos in the works right now.
Right.
So like, yes. please don't think that by the fact that there hasn't been a video on the YouTube that we've stopped. I've gotten a lot of messages like, I really liked your show. Why'd you guys stop? And I'm like,
yeah,
four months.
I guess it's been a while. Yeah.
It has been a while. I should just get a Sarah Plays up there. Just something to.
Yeah.
Because she's been asking to do one. She really wants to do one. She wants to do one for a PC Engine game, actually. So.
Ooh, that should be good.
Yeah. So maybe. Yeah. Yeah. If you want to see that, leave a comment.
So speaking of HD Rumble.
Okay.
That you know that brings to mind and the N64 Rumble, which was an add-on to the system, and
yes.
I remember me thinking this was a gimmick.
Yep, it packed in with Star Fox, right?
With Star Fox. Yep. So when Ocarina of Time came out, you know, people probably had one.
Yeah,
but it was optional for the game. You didn't need it, but you know, you bet I was going to use it because like the only other game I had.
Yeah.
That really supported it.
Yep.
But, you know, one of the things that lends to its gimmickiness was that you couldn't have your memory card in at the same time.
You're right. And that's why the Dreamcast controller is so thick, so you could have a memory card and a Rumble Pack in at the same
Which
time.
Which I do not own for my Dreamcast, if that's telling at all.
I don't have one either. If I remember correctly, did the N64 Rumble Pack have batteries in it?
Yeah, I think it took... my gold one takes 3 AAA, but I think the standard one takes 2.
Exactly, but I think like when the batteries died on it, I just never like.
Right.
Because it was cool when I got it, but it was never cool enough for me to make that a standard way I played a video game.
Right. But then by the time the next generation rolled around, they made it a permanent feature.
It was standard. It was just built into. Did the original PlayStation controller have it? Or no, it didn't, because the original PlayStation controller wasn't called the DualShock. DualShock
right.
is when they started putting that in.
That's right.
But yeah, from that point on, it's weird to not have that in a system. Do you remember the Nintendo? Here's okay. That's a standard. That's greatness. But I'll give you a gimmick.
Sure.
you a gimmick. They had a Rumble Pack for the Nintendo DS.
I remember.
It only worked with a couple games, like Metroid Prime Pinball and,
And it went into the GBA slot, right?
Yes, it did.
If your DS had one.
The same with, here's another gimmick, the DS web browser.
Oh, God.
Which was a cartridge.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, so like just because something it does become a standard doesn't mean it can also not be a gimmick at some time. But
that's a good segue.
Yeah, and you know what? Speaking of the whole Dreamcast controller and having 2 ports so you could put in a Rumble Pack, the other port was for that other gimmick, the VMU.
Yeah,
it was a tiny little Game Boy that played, you know. Like games that had to be like 2K or less. It was very interesting, and it was a second screen way before DS.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
One of my favorite uses. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, as long as it's plugged in the controller, you know, it can give you information. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. One of my favorite uses for it is if you played Virtua Tennis on it, which you probably still haven't, even though I sent you a copy, right? Okay. I've been trying to get you to play that one for a couple of years. I'm gonna remind you of that. But like, you could basically play it entirely off the VMU because there was a miniature version of the game that was basically Pong. You know,
that's great.
So you could actually like play it along with that. And of course, they had some games that were actually really really good with it. like the raising sim that was built into Sonic Adventure. And, you know, it had to compete with the Pocket Station, which was a total gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's... Yeah. Okay, please, go on to your next thing.
Yeah, so you mentioned things that started off as gimmicks, and wireless controllers definitely fits that bill, especially in the 8-bit days when it was line-of-sight infrared.
Oh, my goodness. I had one. It was made by Acclaim. That should tell ditto. You. That should tell. Mm-hmm. Oh, you had the same one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You had to put this box up on like your TV or somewhere. Yeah, line of sight. And it had the world's slowest turbo fire. It was like, boom. Boom.
My parents got this for me, and I can't remember if I still have it or not. Oh, I should look.
I got it from one of my cousins. I'm guessing every parent and every like friend got it because it probably started off on clearance. You know what I mean?
Right.
But, yeah, I got this, and I'm like, thanks, another controller. And I used it two or three times, and I'm like, this is terrible.
So I have actually a video in the works.
Yeah.
Well, it's scripted anyway. That rather hilariously illustrates these issues. So that's all I'll say about that right now.
Excellent.
But I'll give you a hint. There was an official Nintendo peripheral that was infrared line of sight.
Oh.
Do you know what it is?
Oh, I know it. I know it. Should I say it?
Or, you should say it. Yeah.
It's the satellite, right?
Yeah, the NES satellite.
Yes.
The wireless four-player adapter, which looks so friggin' cool, but it's so heavy. And it's like it takes like four or six C-size batteries.
Yeah.
It's nuts. Crazy.
But it has
to be that heavy to have four controllers plugged into it.
Oh, yeah. But, it has a way better name than their official four-player adapter. Do you remember?
The four score?
The four score. And I just realized now, right now, that that's a Lincoln reference. Holy cow. No, seriously, this is a revelation I've just had right now.
Okay.
Before it just sounded like a sex act, you know?
God.
No, it's 4 score and 7 years ago. Oh, my goodness. Sorry, this is blowing my mind right now.
Is
this common knowledge? Did everybody know this but me?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Dang it.
But what's even funnier to me about this is that, at least the model numbers, the 4 score comes after the NES satellite and its adapter. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that's weird.
So it's like the cheaper, more useful version of it is the one they developed later or released later or whatever.
It's so weird.
But I have both.
Yeah.
Worth noting. So that may be the thing I'm referring to with this video or not. Who knows?
Here's a gimmick.
Yeah.
Some Sega Genesis games, because it was not standard for people to have a four-player adapter, some cartridges had 2 additional cartridge slots in the cartridge.
What? You mean controller slots?
Yeah, controller slots. Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, controller slots in the cartridge. Just like, here's a gimmick. Some Neo Geo games could be land together.
Oh, God.
Through a mini plug in the top of the cartridge. You know, there's all kinds of examples of things like that that never became standards, that just were gimmicks. Okay, let's...
But the wireless controller did become a standard thanks to the WaveBird, which ironically took out the GameCube standard rumble.
You're right, it did.
But
way to go, Nintendo.
Right? The great thing is, though, is that those things could last a long time on just 2 AA batteries.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, unlike the N64 Rumble on the AAAs, unlike... Well, actually, I think the infrared wireless controllers lasted a pretty long time because, you know, the remotes do. You know, Wii controllers later did with the rumble as well.
Yep.
Well, I guess maybe not as much because it does take a lot of juice. But, you know, still, like you know, they've been finding ways to get more and more power out of less and less battery.
Yeah.
And that's really great.
I find that good battery life is a gimmick.
Right. Oh, sorry, Switch. Oh boy.
It's not just Switch though. Like the Vita the 3DS, you know, the Switch. Yeah, they've all had bad battery lately because, you know, graphics technology has advanced so much, but battery technology really hasn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, ultimately, all it took was essentially, you know, some form of radio to make wireless controllers not a gimmick, because the line of sight thing is what was the problem.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Essentially,
just yeah.
So that was good. What about the next one?
Okay, this was seen as a huge gimmick, and I don't know. I still don't know where history is going to fall on this one, but the double screen gaming starting with the DS or maybe starting with the VMU, depending on how you
Or maybe starting with the Game & Watch and going back
okay,
to our
first you're
example.
Right. You're right. So two screens, is that greatness or is that a gimmick? Like, I think that there's been great uses of it, but a lot of the time, gimmick. What do you think?
Right. I've played so little like DS and 3DS lately that I can't really remember a lot of stuff. Like keeping informational stuff off the screen that, you know, you can look away for a minute is good. And it seemed like they took that idea with the Wii U and kind of ran with it.
Yeah.
And so it's upsetting, I guess, that the Switch doesn't let you do any kind of dual screen gaming. I was still hoping for that because that would be a great way to do DS stuff on that system. But I guess, you know, you could still display both screens.
So, yeah.
You could just display both screens on like a portrait mode Switch
now.
Since
the controllers come out, if you could like lay it vertically.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so, yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean though. It's disappointing.
Yeah, so I don't, you know, especially if this does replace Nintendo's handhelds somehow, like I think dual screen gaming, at least as far as Nintendo is concerned, is probably done.
Oh yeah, they'll have to leave it up to all the other people making handhelds.
Right. Well, like no one else has really picked up on this though. Like there no one the other fads that we'll talk about ended up getting adopted, but like no one thought that the dual screen thing outside of Nintendo has been a good idea.
And like it's
except Sega. I mean, and they're gone now.
Yeah. But like it's hard to think of this one as a gimmick because like the DS was like the best selling hardware in history, you know, which had this gimmick. And there are games that have used it very, very well. You know, there's some mystery games where you can, you know, jot down notes on the touch screen but still like keep playing the game on the main screen or maps that came up. But really, maybe it shouldn't have been two screens. Maybe it should have been one long screen because that's essentially what you're getting. And on the 2DS, it actually is just one long screen.
Right. Yeah. With a visual divider that. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. But yeah, it seems like that one's not going to ever become a standard. But was it a gimmick? Because it was so popular. I mean, not popular, but so. I don't know. That's
right.
A hard
it's
one
been
to call.
It's been in operation for like a decade plus.
Okay. Now,
so it can't. Is it a gimmick? I guess it depends if they keep making 3DSs or have a successor system or not. But I think of the DS Zelda games, which required you to use the touchpad for moving Link around, you know, instead of the standard D-pad whatever combo. And I think that's a big reason I'd never finished Phantom Hourglass despite trying to start it twice. It's like, it's just the control scheme, while I think well intentioned, just it's so strange.
But here's something that started off as a gimmick. Touch screens.
Yeah.
Back in the Apple II days, my mom was a teacher, so she used educational technology and things like that. So I got to see some of the early touch screens, which was an overlay you'd put on your existing monitor, and they had, you know, not it's very, very low resolution screens, so basically just selecting objects. It wasn't even good enough to really like draw with your finger or anything like that. And then, you know, we had touch screens go on with things like Palm Pilot, and in the video game sector, the game.com, which had a terrible touchscreen.
Mm-hmm.
And in those cases, it was, you know, with the game.com, it was definitely a gimmick. It also that system also had two cartridge slots, so you could carry a second cartridge around. Gimmick. And the game.com allowed you to hook up a modem to it where you could connect to Delphi Internet, which was a text-based, you know, internet thing, so you could use like Usenet. And I'm not even going to finish. Gimmick. You know, those, but so many things from game.com in retrospect are now standards. Touchscreen on a handheld, the ability to store multiple games on one system, internet, you know, these are all things that we have, but this system just did all of them so, so very badly. Yeah.
Well, speaking of control inputs that might be gimmicks.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
All right. The Waggle.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Motion controls in general go through phases where they're a gimmick and when they're not. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like whenever Nintendo's doing them, they're a gimmick. And whenever another company's doing them, they're really cool. Okay. Waggle. Was there motion control? There was motion control before the Wiimote, right?
In consoles?
Okay, you had the U-Force or the Power Glove.
Right, yeah.
They weren't the same type of motion, but they were definitely like interpreting physical movement to the game. So
yeah, so the both the Power Glove and the Samba Maracas are ultrasound based, which I'm not sure how that worked exactly, but you know, the Wii remotes are a combination of gyroscopes and the infrared sensor.
Yeah.
And like as a pointer device works pretty well. Like it's used really well in games like WarioWare.
Yeah.
For instance. Maybe not so well in Twilight Princess.
Yeah. I mean, it was a gimmick in Twilight Princess. Super Mario Galaxy, the waggle to jump, never liked it. Would have preferred a button.
Mm-hmm.
But on some games, it was fantastic. House of the Dead with a Wiimote, super fun. Any game that used pointing. World of Goo with a Wiimote, so fun. Just absolutely great. Although that was more of pointer technology than it was motion. But No More Heroes, I replayed it on the PlayStation 3. Not nearly as fun without having to shake the controller to recharge and the motion. They just did a very good job with that game. And even though the graphics aren't as good, I definitely prefer to play the Wii U version. Sorry. The Wii version over the remakes. I think it was a gimmick when they tried to shoehorn it onto the PlayStation 3.
Well, that's just it. Like, if it were just a gimmick, you wouldn't have had Microsoft and Sony trying to do their own version of it.
Yeah.
Microsoft with the Kinect, yeah. And then Sony with the God.
What?
It was called the Arc. What's it called now? I don't remember anymore.
Move.
The Move. Yeah, just it looks so ridiculous. Like the only good use of the Move was Johann Sebastian Joust, which I think they called something else eventually when it came out. But
yeah,
God, you know, but like they scrambled because the Wii was so popular. They scrambled to duplicate this. And I don't think it's a gimmick overall, because everything, you know, the phone in your pocket's got a gyroscope in it now.
Yep.
You know, so the Wii U gamepad used it. I don't want to say greatly, but you know that's a big part of the Splatoon motion controls are part of that, and you love yes. Splatoon. I don't use the motion controls in Splatoon, but a lot of people do. They don't Heathen. Care to use the dual sticks.
But I love it. But also, now then it looked like motion was going away because, you know, Xbox dropped it. PlayStation 4 still supports it, but, you know, you never hear about it. And then it's making a comeback now, and I'm not talking about the Switch. I'm talking about VR.
Ah, there you go. Yep, so it's a necessary component of VR.
It's a necessary component. And both in motion is required for the helmet, but also for mm-hmm. the controllers that they have, which are using that. So the Switch as well is, I think, pretty neat that like a game like ARMS has these very cool motion control abilities that you can use, but you don't have to use it. I think that's what's going to be nice is Nintendo is realizing that people actually do enjoy options.
Also important to VR, haptic yeah. feedback, bringing that back around.
Ah, yes. Hey, full circle.
Topic there.
Full
yeah,
circle.
There. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe not quite in the way that Nintendo's doing it right now, but like, so I can imagine these things are important steps. And so if we really care about VR, which I'm, you know, thought was going to be a big thing 25 years ago and sort of lay dormant for a while, these are all important steps.
Yeah.
And included in that, I think, is our next item.
Okay.
The 3DS 3D screen gimmick.
Ooh.
Or something important.
I think it's amazing what they did with it. I think they really delivered on something that yeah. looked like when it was announced, I'm like, there's no way that works. But it does. But I don't know. I turn it off. I almost always turn it off.
Yeah, me too.
Well, maybe if I had the new 3DS where it's supposed to have eye tracking gimmick. Okay, sorry. No, that gimmick question mark actually, because I don't know. Mm. Eye tracking might be very cool, but it's supposed to be really, really good and eliminate the problems of having to have that sweet spot, you know, when you're holding the game to have the effect work. But I don't have the new 3DS, so I almost always just turn it off. Plus, my kids are sometimes looking over my shoulder, and I know it's not good for their eyes. So, and since the Switch doesn't have it, I'd say it's not. I'd say screenless 3D is done.
Yeah, yeah. The screenless part, probably. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Like the 2DS is almost an admission of that, essentially.
What do you think about 3D TVs? Is that a gimmick? I don't hear much about them anymore.
Yeah, well, that was definitely a gimmick. You needed glasses for one thing,
yeah.
And you need, you know, multiple sets for any more than one person to actually use it. So yeah, that went away pretty quickly. And
oh,
that's,
did it?
And
that, is it gone? I never.
Oh, pff, I don't
never
even.
Okay.
You know, they still like have like, you know, 3D Blu-rays and stuff out there,
yeah.
But.
Okay. I don't.
I wasn't trying to push the TVs anymore, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
For whatever that's worth. But, yeah, I mean, still, like, 3D in general, important to the VR thing. So I think they're going to keep working on it. But, yeah, the implementation didn't work for everybody. There are people who it just gave them headaches. So it didn't work for them at all or what. But, you know, it was a good attempt. But I think, we can mark that one up to gimmick status.
And even Nintendo's like, hey, we want to release a low-cost version of this. Let's take off the main thing that we named our system after.
Right.
Yeah. So,
at least they can go from 1 to 2 to 3DS, and then now when they did the 4DS, it'll be a Tesseract, and you won't even have to use your hands.
We never made our 1DS video.
Hey, it's not too late.
Oh, man. Guys, we had this amazing idea. You know what? I'm not going to spoil it, although
that's
I
right.
just
we're
already,
gonna,
I already
we're
going to
do
but,
it. Yes. We're going to do it still. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Last and certainly not least, though, we've discussed on the show before, Toys to Life. My only comment is, ugh.
Yep. Gimmick.
Yeah, I agree. And despite that I like Lego's bent on it,
Yep.
You know, I know people, Phil, who will buy every single amiibo that's ever released ever.
Yep. Yep.
And you know, sure, there's like the collector portion of it, but like I'm the kind of person who likes toys and still buys them in that I buy Transformers because they're like interesting 3D puzzles to me. But I don't so much buy action figures anymore because they just sit around and don't do anything. Like I can fiddle with a Transformer.
Yeah.
Right. Like I can fiddle with a Lego Dimensions piece. Right. Or like pose it in different ways. I guess you can do that with an action figure too. But like, you know, you can reconstruct these Lego bits.
Yeah.
So I never got into Skylanders. I'm not really big on the amiibos.
And that
Disney
looks like
Infinity
it's,
is dead.
Skylanders is on life support. See how the Switch version does, really, because it doesn't look like they're even working to develop a next one now. So, like, I suppose if the Switch recaptures that kids' audience and they find a good way to do it, who knows? But yeah, it's looking bad for Toys to Life.
You know, most of the ones I buy now, the Lego stuff I buy, I got you your stuff for way cheaper than I got mine.
Yeah. And thank Basically. You. I really want to try it. I think I need to clean up my room a little bit so I have places to put the stuff. But
It does take up space while you're playing and just a store.
I can't play it in the living room because I got a little one who's crawling now. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to playing that. And again, I probably won't even do the Lego parts of it. Like that's one where you know I'm okay with just. Activating I'm more in it for the game itself.
Sure.
And that's where Nintendo totally failed with amiibos, because they just never found a meaningful way to bring them in other than like a physical manifestation of DLC.
You mean they never found a way to bring it to life?
That's very true. The best use of it was in Smash, and even that had severe limitations, only being able to store, you know, one save to an amiibo.
Right.
And you know, I can't for the life of me figure out why they never released a game similar to Lego Dimensions that would incorporate all these wonderful IP and characters. I know it would be a hard game to make, but I would buy the crap out of that. Like
right?
I would buy every single one, you know, there, and I'm not alone there. You know, if they had, you know, Nintendo Infinity, just even thinking about it, I want this game so much. And everybody thought that's what amiibos were going to be. They're like, oh man, okay, they're starting with these small things, but amiibos are going to be. And they went nowhere. In fact, they did worse as they went along because at least Smash had something where, you know, you could save data to them. But after that, they just became these things for costume unlocks.
Yeah, well, and it was partly because, you know, they couldn't use the game save space. So they had to just, you know, detect that you had it and then do something with that, right?
Yeah.
But you know, I was just thinking, too, like, especially the Toys to Life thing is appropriately apt for things like Smash Brothers because you know as a series has come along and they've you know introduced the idea of trophies, which is just you know a still version of the character you're playing with. So now you could own an amiibo that looks like that in the real world, and you know arguably doesn't do a whole lot for you in the game itself. But it's like they had that connection and just kind of let it sit, and then everything else they've done since then hasn't had that much of a connection to the actual game you're playing, you know? Like, even that one was tenuous, but it was there, and it was visible, and you could see it. It's like, oh, this is the exact same Mario statue that's in this game I'm playing.
I only bought, I think, as far as I know, I don't know when the Rob came out, but I think it was in 2015. Maybe 2016. Well, I bought the Rob, and then after that, I got the, like, Squid Sisters from Splatoon. And because my daughters wanted wanted that one. But I don't even know if it interacts with the game. They just like that character. I mean, you know, that's That's all there is to it. I like the idea of amiibos in their original purpose has kind of fallen to the wayside. The only people who are still buying amiibos are the people who are like trying to get the whole set, or you know, the people, you know, or if a favorite character from their childhood comes back, they're buying it for nostalgia. But like, I don't think many people are using them anymore. Just a such a wasted opportunity. It didn't need to be a gimmick, but it became. So what do you think the Nintendo Switch, the whole hybrid nature of it, is a gimmick, or is this greatness?
Oh, you had to leave us with that question. Yep. I'm hoping it's greatness. I mean, I mentioned before how good of a time I had playing Minish Cap on the go and then on my GameCube, the only downfall being I had to like save the game, turn it off, put it in the GameCube and keep going, or vice versa.
Yeah.
I don't know how much I'll be able to play on the go, because I really was expecting like a lower powered separate handheld device to keep going. And in a game like that, where you know it doesn't get any added benefit really being played on a console, and it couldn't be considered a quote unquote console game, that would have been a hard sell. I think I really thought they were just going to combine their handheld and console technologies, and they just cooperate rather than being the same thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, jury is out. Obviously, we'll see what the Switch has to offer. But I guess until then, shall we move on to Future Retro and Pile of Shame?
I'd say so.
Okay. Yes, we were born to play on this retro game. Let's have fun, you eat a Famicom cartoon. Oh, God. Thank you for this video game.
Here's how it works. One of my friends comes by the studio, I pick their favorite movie, and we talk about it for 10 minutes.
Luke, why the f*** do you like this movie?
Well, I'll tell you why the f*** I like this movie, Rob.
Go get it. It's on Netflix. Go watch it. It's brilliant. Do it now, or I'll punch you.
Up top!
This is 10 Minutes About Your Favorite Movie.
Listen to 10 Minutes About Your Favorite Movie every Monday on the Little Podcast Network.
You want to start?
All right. Future Retro is a segment where we talk about contemporary video games that have the potential to be remembered as classics.
Or classics that we've played for the first time, or just more recently.
And in Pile of Shame, we talk about the games we haven't been playing, and try to convince each other if we should.
Or not.
Yeah, I got some shame.
Give me some shame.
Shame! Well, I was talking to some people at work recently, and I was lamenting how I wouldn't get through my Wii U backlog before the Switch comes out.
Yeah.
But this got us on like a discussion about scary video games. Like I mentioned, I have PT and everything, and that you can't get that anymore. But also, you know, sort of more ephemeral experiences based on that, because people can't get PT anymore. And you know, that brought up that I've really only played Assassin's Creed games.
Yeah.
As multiplayer games, like that was the part that interested me the most. So I own Assassin's Creed Brotherhood on my Xbox 360.
Okay.
And Assassin's Creed 3 for my Wii U.
I just gave my brother a copy of that game for his birthday.
Which one?
Assassin's Creed 3 on the Wii U.
Okay. So, you know, obviously, but the problem with Assassin's Creed 3 was I couldn't play multiplayer because it was 1% of all the game sales, at least at the time that I bought it for that game. So there was no one to match with. So
I'm sure it's gone up since then.
Yeah, right. I have these games that I haven't played that I could still do the single, you know, story mode.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And now there's like a flop of a film that's... I assume it's a flop. I've not heard good things.
Okay.
But, you know, Michael Fassbender is still very dreamy, and I wish him success in the future.
Did you see Frank?
No.
Watch Frank.
Okay.
We're getting off on a tangent, but like by the writer of The Men Who Stare at Goats, starring Michael Fassbender.
Okay.
It's good. Or it might not be. It might be the worst movie you've ever seen, or the best.
I never really played an Assassin's Creed game before. I was convinced by Phil to do the multiplayer. More like I was over at his place and we were doing it. And it was like, all right, fine. I'm going to get this for my own Xbox. But at the time, I was really big into the Prince of Persia franchise. And it's like they took all the stealth elements of Two Thrones and made it into its own game. And I heard from friends whose opinion I trusted that it was more of a prototype for a full game. And then Assassin's Creed 2 kind of proved that to be the case. But I still never got into it because I didn't want to reward them for their own franchise. I wanted Ubisoft keep making Prince of Persia games. And then the fourth one that they released, before Forgotten Sands anyway, was a critical failure. Well, I enjoyed it a lot, but people were really unhappy with the execution. And I was unhappy with the fact that the ending was really in the DLC.
Okay.
But what are you going to do? So I think at some point I will have to play Assassin's Creed 3. Maybe. Is it a good candidate for streaming, you know? Because we've talked about doing that.
I think so. Because it's a game that apparently people are pretty mixed about. Like, some people really like the direction it took and some people don't. So it might be interesting to see what your opinion's on. And it's the same with 4. Some people really liked like the ship battles and stuff, and some people really disliked it. So I think those are good ones to do a stream of, because especially if you're going in without any expectation.
Okay. Well, I've heard the 3 has ship stuff in it, even though it's not the primary focus of the game.
Oh, does it? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, I was surprised too, because you know the Assassin's Creed 4 like advertised the ships, but I guess that's
the focus
is just different. But you know, like Brotherhood's story, I've heard, isn't as great. So maybe I'll do 3 first. Maybe the listeners should let me know if they've played either of these games, which one I should try first.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
My first story mode playthrough of an Assassin's Creed game.
That sounds so weird to me. I guess, but You don't. I thought most people played Assassin's Creed for the story mode. Like, I thought the multiplayer was just like a gimmick thrown in there. Okay, like that would be like, I'm finally gonna play a Metroid Prime game for story mode. You know, but because I've only played Echo's multiplayer.
Yeah, you want to talk about gimmicks, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so what do you have?
Okay, I want to start a new feature. Oh. Why not? Okay, because before we've always had Future Retro, which was the choice, and Future Retro was like one of those that, you know, it's like, this game's going to be great in the future. Although, I always take it to mean, here's a game that is great that you haven't heard of, but I still call it Future Retro. We probably need another category, too, but... And then, of course, we've got Pile of Shame, like, wow, I bought this game. Never going to play it. But I've got a new one. I'm thinking of calling it Off the Pile.
Okay.
Or maybe Shame No More. Or actually, let's let the listeners decide what this category is. But basically, it's something that's been on the Pile of Shame for a very, very long time that suddenly, miraculously, if you might say, actually gets played. And is removed from the pile, because previously I always thought the pile only went one way.
Well, no, I mean it's always been my intention to, like, if I talk about something in Pile of Shame, it's my intent to try to play it.
Oh, not me. I mean, I just you know, if it's near the top of the pile, it's got a chance. But you know, if a year ago. I am surrounded by literally thousands of games. And I've only played to any meaningful extent maybe half of them.
Okay.
You know, I think I've tried everything, but anyway.
I mean, like, speaking of Forgotten Sands, you know, I think I have a sealed copy on DS somewhere still.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my.
I'm looking right at it. It's not sealed, though.
Here's my sealed copy of Deus Ex staring at me. There's, oh man, there's way too many sealed games up on my shelf. I'm going to open them just so I feel better.
All right.
not going to play them, just going to open them. But anyway, so this one, a friend loaned it to me year and a half ago. And I kept saying, you know, I'm not going to get around to playing it. I'm going to return it to you. But he'd be like, no. You'll get around to it eventually, and you'll really enjoy it, so you can keep borrowing it. And I finally put it in because I was getting hyped. I was getting all hyped for the, Switch Zelda. And I'm like, I want to play something Zelda. And I'm like, but Zelda, you know, starting a Zelda game takes a long time. The tutorials, the blah, blah, blah. You know how the first couple hours of a Zelda game are.
Right.
Okay. But so I'm like, I just want to play some Zelda, and the game is Hyrule Warriors. Now I know it's not a Nintendo made Zelda. It's a Nintendo cooperated with Zelda, but man, is it fun. It's fun. It's definitely not as deep as a Zelda game. The story reads like fan fiction. Because it's like taking all the characters from all the different Zelda games, and you know Minda's in there, and you know there's Twilight Princess type levels, and there's like, you know, characters from, you know, there's the Deku Tree, and you know there's all kinds of stuff, you know, Impa's in there, but it's so nice. It's just this amazing mashup, and the gameplay is very shallow. You know, it's just, although the weapon customization is pretty nice, it's very interesting. But like, mainly it's a hack and slash game. You're just like hit button. But just the variety of the environments and the characters, I'm just having an absolute blast with it. And the story is, you know, cliche and weird, but like they found a way to incorporate all these different characters and all these different pieces of music from the previous games. They've got like remixed things, and it's just a fun game, and it's my daughter's first, like, it's not her first Zelda game, because she's watched me play Wind Waker before, but here, I have to tell you this, and okay, people listening with little kids, this might be a spoiler. Okay, so we're playing the game. And Zelda's in the game, and at the beginning she's like, you know, support character, whatever, from the beginning. And then she is kidnapped or disappears or something, you know, as you do. And then I'm playing the game, and Impa's in, and a couple new characters, and then we meet Sheik. Okay, and you know, Sheik joins the party for a while, and my daughter really wants to get Zelda back. That's she, because she loves Princess Zelda from her amiibo and from, you know, from Wind Waker, you know, and she's like, come on, where do we go to get Zelda? You know, she's just like, very much. And finally, she says the best line I've ever heard her say. She goes, because I'm going through a cutscene, and she goes, why are you wasting your time talking to Sheik? We gotta find Zelda. And I'm like, I'm just like, oh my gosh, she doesn't know. Like, this is, you know, this is gonna be a big thing when she finds out. You know what I mean? This is gonna be her M. Night Shyamalan moment. You know, right. this is gonna blow her mind. And I'm like. This is because we can't have that again. It any of us who have been playing forever, you know,
right.
It's, and I was like, and then I'm like, maybe I should stop this game. Maybe I should play a different game that reveals this better. You know what I mean? But it was just like, you know, sometimes you have to take a step back and go, wow, there's like, this is a totally new experience for her, you know? So I'm having tons of fun with it, and I'm about halfway through the game, and I think I might actually beat this one because of my daughter egging me on to keep playing, because she wants to see what happens next.
Okay.
And I truly feel that now that she's a little older, I better beat it now, because when Switch Zelda comes out, that's what we're playing.
Right. Oh, I can't wait.
Yep.
Just a few more weeks.
So
maybe
excited.
For you, I don't know if I get a Switch or not.
Dude, you gotta get it. Oh man, yeah, yeah. What bundle should I get? Oh, they're sold out. Yeah. That was very nearly me, though. They sold out very quickly in Japan. But, dude, I think this one's going to be one worth waiting in line for. Or if not, at least at launch, get the Wii U Zelda, so we can at least talk about this.
Yeah, maybe that's why I'll have to wait to play it is in, like, December or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
You know what? Hopefully it really is selling that well. That will be our problem is people not getting them, rather than the much worse problem of look at all these shelves full of dusty Switches, you know.
Dang.
I don't know. There's so much more hype about this than the Wii U. There just is. Just you can feel it. It's tangible.
Oh yeah, and you know, part of it's Nintendo making it. It's scarce in a fashion, but on the other hand, if it weren't people didn't want it, it wouldn't be sold out everywhere. You know, there's a little of both happening. You know, there.
Yeah, you know what?
A little artificial shortage. But
okay, let's save this for another topic because I have strong feelings on artificial shortages.
Okay,
and whether they even exist.
All right.
There's a little teaser. There's a little teaser for you. But what I will say is there's going to be no shortage of fun when I get Zelda. Because it's basically been the only game Nintendo's been advertising for the last 3 years.
Right.
I mean, E3 was nothing but this game last year. And then, you know, and they'll come to, like, the video game awards, and all these companies are like, we're going to bring trailers for all of our new games coming out. And Nintendo's like, we're just bringing Zelda. And everyone's like, you still win, you know? So, oh, man. It's been a long road. I can't see that it's not going to be worth it, though. All the videos I've watched of it, it just looks fantastic.
To train your game, head over to our show notes at famicomdojo.tv/podcast for additional pictures, video, and bonus audio for this episode. Call us at 608-492-1923 to leave a voicemail for our Denchimail episodes, or send us a comment on Facebook or Twitter at Famicom Dojo. Consider leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes, and be sure to subscribe to Famicom Dojo on YouTube for our latest videos about retro, import gaming, and more.
Prove me wrong, Nintendo.
That's right, Nintendo, you know you're listening.
Because Nintendo, you know that I'm never wrong. I've got my reputation to stake.
That's right,
I
proved that last time. I was
100% correct in the predictions episode.
Well, we're already wrong for some things in 2017, so.
Shut up! Okay, all right.
Okay, then I guess.
That's all I got, yeah.
Yeah, and until next time then, the dojo is?
The dojo is a gimmick.
Ugh.
Yeah.
10 years strong.
We've been going for 10 years right now. Would you call us a standard? I mean,
oh Lord.
We're totally a gimmick. We're talking consoles? What kind of thing is that?
That will never catch on.
No. No one else has been doing that. I thought that would definitely go mainstream. Oh well.
Someday.
We'll keep going. I've got, we should have, like, HD quips. So, like, when we make a really quality observation, your computer shakes.
Jeez.
'Cause that's what people want. We'll sell them a little USB dongle that syncs with our podcast.
Baby.
Yeah.
All right.
So until next time, the dojo is...
No, we already did that. We're done.
What? No, I was trying to start a new gimmick. It would be dual closing.
Oh!
Dual closing, you know. Dual closing. Yeah, that's patent pending.
I'm out. I got a thing.
The dojo is...
My hair.
See, Sean, that's why these things never happen. All right, speaking of taking off, goodbye.
Famicom Dojo.
The Famicom Dojo video game podcast is produced every week by That's Orange LLC. Our theme songs, Famicom Thrash and RPG, were written and performed by the Amari Tones. Find them on iTunes and at amaritones.net. Pixel art by Lewis Lloyd Judson at lewistrations.co.uk. Find us at famicomdojo.tv/podcast, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever RSS feeds are downloaded. And, of course, head over to littlepodcast.com to listen to other great shows on the Little Podcast Network.